Hello, and welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. This is episode 22. Today is Monday, August 22nd. I'm Matt Weaver, and I'm here with Scott Nelson. Good evening, Scott.
Howdy.
How's it going?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
We're recording a little later than we might have otherwise been, but my computer was not playing videos on YouTube, which was a minor crisis. So
that had to be solved.
It had to be solved.
Imminently.
There were Seinfeld videos I had to watch. I'm not kidding. There was an article I was reading, and they mentioned a Seinfeld moment, and so I wanted to watch the clip, and YouTube was like, "Your Mac does not play H.264, which is not true. But in the end, my Adblock extension in Safari was outdated and messing the world up. So,
do you have Chrome? Out of curiosity, had you tried it in Chrome? Like,
yes.
It works in Chrome.
Yes.
But it did not work in Safari.
Correct.
I see. So you got it fixed. I previously complained to you lately, right, about my problems with Safari.
Yes.
I have more and more things that just won't work in Safari. And I had a customer service thing where I called in to get a bank password account issue dealt with, and they're like, "Yeah, it's just not going to work in Safari."
Yeah, which is really unfortunate.
Apple has done that to themselves, though.
Yes and no. I mean, part of it, I think, is especially in banks. I don't know how much of the website development staff is actually running on a Mac,
right?
I know other places that I have worked doing website development, everybody runs on a Mac. Like, they have to almost hazard pay to get people to run a stupid Windows machine to see how the site works on IE or, you know, Chrome on Windows. And so there,
right,
Everything worked great in Safari, just because that's what developers were in all day, every day.
I guess if Safari on a Mac had enough market share, they would be forced to care more about it. As is, they don't really have to care about it because...
Well, because the answer is it works in Chrome.
Right. And Chrome runs on a Mac, and everyone who uses a Mac uses Chrome, so there you go.
Now, that does not excuse Apple's perhaps deserved reputation of allowing Safari to be the new IE. Simply because it gets updated.
If Safari were the greatest browser on Mac and everyone used it, then it would have the market share required for people to care about it. So
Apple just doesn't update Safari with the same speed and veracity that Chrome is updated, or even Mozilla is updated. I would like for Apple to disassociate Safari updates from OS updates. I know that they feel... I can understand how maybe that was valuable at one time.
Mm.
I don't know that that's valuable anymore.
Yeah.
So
you got updated, you got all your videos watched, and here we are.
And here we are.
All right.
It just, you know, it's a problem, right? Like, I have this thing and it doesn't work, and now that bothers me, and I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, you do hit a point where it has to be fixed,
right?
Like, I have things like that where it just doesn't work in one browser, doesn't work in the other. I'm not going to debug. I'm not going to troubleshoot. I mean, I spend my day doing that professionally. I don't want to troubleshoot my own computer sometimes. And then you reach a point where this must work now.
Yes.
Okay, you reached that point. I can respect that.
Yep. So here we are. I have an iPhone thing I want to talk about, but first, let's talk about your new diet.
Oh, yes. The new thing. So I'm a little tired tonight, but it's because I haven't had any caffeine today, which as someone...
Is today the first day of this?
I just started this today. So yeah, it's always great. I'm going to love listening to this next week, you know, talking about something like the first day, like I've accomplished something. I've made it through one day. So I decided to do a juice fast, I think we've talked about this before, but you know, there was that movie on Netflix that was pretty popular, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead.
Yep.
About that guy who drove around the country juicing and encouraging other people to do a juice fast.
Right.
And I think he did it for like 60 days or a very long time. I'm not going to do that.
So we should be clear. When you mean juicing, you mean shoving fruits and vegetables into a machine juicer, yeah. That produces...
No, I'm juicing!
Yeah, that produces the liquids out of the
right.
out of the material. Yeah. Right?
So I just have been struggling lately to get back on a good... You know, I kind of got off of my paleo or zone type diet that I was eating. Mm-hmm. I was having a really hard time getting back on track, and I just feel like I need kind of a shock to the system sort of thing.
So
and ever since I watched this movie years ago, like, I've kind of been intrigued by it.
You want to try it?
Yeah. So I thought, hey, now's the time. I'm going to do it. I'm going to start off with 7 days is my goal.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Maybe extend it. I'm not going to do it for 60 days. I don't think it's a really healthy thing in the long term. You know, that's always my argument against it with other people.
I think since that original movie, that original documentary came out, I believe we have now come to understand that fiber plays a fairly significant and important role in feeding your gut microbiome, right? And so yep. The long-term effects of getting rid of all fiber out of your diet
is bad for your digestive system.
Would be bad.
Which should be obvious without any scientific
yeah, but that doesn't... I mean, there are lots proof. Of people that eat, you know, nothing but crappy white bread, meat, cheese, yeah. potato chips, and soda, right, who aren't getting any fiber either. And it's not obvious to them that they're having... that their lack of fiber is causing a problem in mm-hmm. them. But the premise of this, right, is by throwing out the fiber, you're able to ingest a much higher density of nutrients, you know, in your glass of
right
of juice. So,
and then the no caffeine thing is just, I mean, part of it is kind of a detox sort of thing, you know.
Yep.
Clear out your digestive tract, release toxins from your body kind of thing. So I decided that cutting out caffeine would probably be a good idea. Plus, I've gotten to the point where I drink lots and lots of caffeine, and I've done this before where occasionally it's good to just reset back to zero so that now, you know, one cup of coffee has the same effect that currently maybe, you know, two or three do.
Yeah, I get that way as well. But to me, I always notice it when I have a hard time sleeping and I realize I'm just kind of on a continuous caffeine buzz. Mm. That's when I realize that it's gone too far, right? And I have to take a zero tolerance approach to caffeine for a week or two. And then I can go back to consuming caffeine like a responsible adult.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's the goal. The other reason that this is good for me and will work for me is I do well with diets through abstention, like I'm not going to eat a certain thing. Well, yep. When you're doing strictly juice, then I can't possibly eat Oreo cookies, right? Because, I mean, there wouldn't be any juice coming out of them if I shoved them in the juicer. Now, so it just kind of forces...
Is that really true? I mean, yeah. Do you know that? I
don't. We're not going to find out.
So you must have bought a juicer.
I did. I bought a juicer. I did a little research on them. I don't know if you know much about juicers, but I bought a masticating juicer.
It's not the high speed one.
It's not the speed. Right. And what are those called? Centrifugal juicers?
Yeah. Centrifugal.
Yeah. I did not do one of those. I did the slow speed masticating juicer. Because most reviews and stuff that I read about it said, A, it's more efficient, it extracts much more juice out of the fruits and vegetables, and also the juice that you create lasts longer because it doesn't get as oxidated.
Yeah, because it doesn't get heated.
Right, so it isn't going to spoil as fast. So I think up to like 24 hours depending upon what ingredients are in it. Whereas the other style juicer, it's really only good for a few hours.
So do you make like one big vat of juice for the day? What's your strategy here?
So I'm still in experimentation mode. So I actually ran the juicer 4 different times today, trying different things. So I made juice with kale and with spinach and with celery and tomatoes and apples and carrots and beets. And I tried a bunch of different stuff today, which was good. I kind of have an idea now of the flavors I do and don't like.
So kale is very bitter.
I was really surprised. I eat a lot of kale, like whole kale. I like kale salad. I like roasted kale, sauteed kale, kale in my soup, kale juiced is terrible. Like
by itself.
It tastes really bad. I was like, I'm going to put tons of kale in this because I love kale.
No, you don't. Mm. The trick to getting kale in a juice is you put some kale in a juice and then you put a bunch of other stuff in to cover up the terrible taste of the kale.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to do that. So I just, today I put it in one that was like a savory one. So it was like tomato and celery and kale. And then it had like a little horseradish in it, which sounded really good. But the kale flavor is so overpowering. So I almost think it's going to have to be in ones where there's a sweet, something, some sort of powerful fruit flavor to cover the kale.
I had a lot of success covering up kale with, you know, Granny Smith apples or, you know, citrusy stuff like that.
Right? Carrots. I did a lot of carrots. And the carrot flavor is pretty strong. That would probably help if I put carrot in the same one that kale is in.
Yeah.
So you've done the juice fast before, or you just have a juicer and have done some juicing?
I think I made it 5 or 6 days. The hardest part for me for, like, crazy dietary stuff like that is... it's a tremendous impact on your social life.
Like when you texted me tonight and said, do you want to go out for dinner? And I said, no, I'm drinking juice.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But but that stuff, like during the week is one thing. You know, this past weekend I was traveling and visiting friends, you know, now what are you going to, you know, if you're juicing, you're going to haul that around and haul a bunch of fruits and vegetables with you and then set it up and do it. I mean, it's a pain in the butt.
Well,
right?
The guy in the movie puts it in the back of his hatchback, right? And...
But that was that guy's purpose, right? I mean,
right.
I'm going to, you know, be with people and not to be that guy that's causing a bunch of pain.
I mean, I think if you really wanted to maintain it, you could just buy a bottle of Naked Juice, a couple bottles of Naked Juice, or something that is just pure veggies and fruits and just get by. But still, then you're the guy sitting there drinking a bottle of Naked Juice while everybody's eating a burger and fries.
Yeah, that's not going to go over.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about it, though. I have known people who use a blender, like a Vitamix or something like that, and they make a morning, their breakfast is a smoothie, right? Because then you're getting the fiber.
Yeah, that's the thing that I don't really see. I mean... The main reason I'm doing this is not totally for I'm not totally sold on the I'm getting wicked crazy amounts of nutrients out of it. You know, like I don't really see a huge advantage over juice over smoothie. But I'm just kind of trying something different.
Yeah. I'm curious. It stands to reason that like per unit volume of whatever you might put in a juicer, if you put that same stuff in a smoothie, like it's just not going to be as dense.
Right.
I mean, that seems to make sense to me. But I couldn't point to a scientific analysis that's actually measured nutrient densities, you know, in a smoothie versus a juice to say definitively one way or the other if that's true. But...
Part of my reasoning of not wanting to do it in the past is I tend to eat more of like a paleo style, higher protein, higher fat, lower carb diet.
Yep.
So then switching to this all juice all the time, I mean, it's strictly carbohydrates. So I've always thought that would be such a huge shift. Well, since the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, I've just been eating whatever anyway, right? I'm already back to, yeah. I'm already back to like a conventional American diet. So it didn't feel like it would be that huge of a, you know, disruption to try the juice thing now. So
surely there's protein in some of the things you're putting in the juicer, right?
You know, I haven't really looked into that yet, but I don't think a ton. No, because I mean, the only vegetables I know of that are high in protein are beans, you know, soybeans, and legumes. Like, I don't think most vegetables have any protein in them.
Yeah.
So the guy doing this for 60 days, I mean, I think he's running pretty much protein free. Which that's why I would never do this. You know, I'm thinking a week will be good. I like to work out too much. Like, you can't lift weights and not eat protein. So,
well, yeah, certainly, protein is important. Wow. Nutritiondata.self.com requires the Flash player to view what should be an HTML table.
Oh. Probably because it was developed 10 years ago.
I feel like if I won the lottery, I would use the money to hasten the demise of Flash on the internet. Like, it is actively bad. But
no comment.
Yeah, that's just me on my hobby horse.
My other problem with it is I do feel like it's pretty wasteful. Like, I feel kind of sad when I'm dumping, you know, so out one side of the juicer comes the juice and out the other side comes all the residual pulp, you know, that then you're just throwing away.
Yeah.
And it seems like kind of wasteful. I've read online people who will put it in like a, I don't know, put it in soup or do something with it. I don't know. You've already extracted all the nutrients from it, so now it's just like fiber filler.
At the end of the day, fruits and vegetables in the average grocery store in America are astonishingly inexpensive.
Yeah.
So it's technically wasteful.
But not financially wasteful.
It's not really financially wasteful.
At the very least, I feel like I should start like a compost bin.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, that I've thought I should have for years now, so this might be an incentive to actually do it.
So there is, now that I've reloaded this in Chrome, there is 2.2 grams of protein per serving, which is 1 cup chopped. 67 grams chopped.
Of kale?
Of kale. So
even that, though, I don't know that the juicing, I don't know where the protein is essentially in the, I mean, makeup of the vegetable. I mean, how do you know you're still getting the protein with the juicing? It's not a high protein diet, regardless of how you spin it.
Yeah. There's 1.3 grams of dietary fiber, which clearly you're not getting that.
Right.
So, you know, it's not protein free. You're going to get some protein, I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to kind of scale back on my workout this week too, because I am trying to use this as, you know, a get back on track type thing, kind of get refocused again. So I don't think it hurts to just kind of have a nice restful week.
No, it's good.
So we'll see. I'll report next week. On how many days I made it. You want to place a bet?
I don't, because I don't want to be perceived as betting on your failure.
I mean, in a way, it's already accomplishing its purpose, because the middle of the afternoon, I really wanted to go to Starbucks and get a coffee and put some cream in it and maybe have a scone, you know, like those things sometimes happen. And I didn't, because, hey, I'm juicing.
Yeah. Do you have a headache?
I have a mild headache, but that's from the caffeine. That's not from the
I'll be really intrigued to see how tomorrow goes for you.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of glad we're podcasting today, because I think tomorrow you're going to be
really low energy.
Yeah, you're going to be a little bit of a basket case tomorrow.
Probably. We'll see.
Yeah. So, that's exciting. I have been thinking that I need to do something for my diet. I don't know what it is. It's not juicing. I don't feel compelled to do a juice fast. I don't know. Maybe I just need to choose to not have any sweets for a month, right? Like maybe September should be the month of no sweets. I don't know. Something like that might, you know, go a long way to help improving my diet.
Mm-hmm. You were successful doing something like that in the past, I remember. Not that long ago.
Yeah, I've done this type of stuff more than once before. This summer, I've had a lot of kind of social vacation-y things, right, where I've allowed myself to eat more freely. And then I've struggled to kind of get back on the horse, as it were, during the regular week. And as a consequence, my weight loss has really stagnated over the summer. Like, I really wanted it, you know, I wanted to make some real headway, and I've not, you know, I make some headway and then it goes back up and I make some headway again. I just keep kind of bouncing around the same 5 or 6 pounds on the scale. And that's not doing for me what I want to do.
Right.
I'd like to move the scale 10 pounds lower. So, I might need to make a dietary change to make that happen. So when I figure that out, I'll let you know.
All right.
Let's talk about my iPhone thing.
Oh yeah. What's up?
My iPhone battery doesn't seem to last as long anymore. And the phone's almost a year old now, right? It's a success. So it occurred to me today that I may be using the phone more. Like, the reason the battery doesn't seem to last as long as it did is because I'm doing more stuff with it, right? I'm Bluetoothing in the car, and I'm not playing Pokemon Go, right? But, you know, I'm playing games, and now I've got this new Bluetooth headset system for my motorcycle helmet, so I can Bluetooth on the motorcycle now. I think maybe I'm just using the phone more. I read, not every day, but I often read news in Apple News, which is a battery hog. I don't know what that thing is doing, but it's not doing it very efficiently. So, you know, whenever I look at the battery usage, news has consumed quite a lot of battery, which seems astonishing to me, considering it's just looking at text on a screen, right? Yeah. It's not watching videos or something like that. But
there's a little animation in there, I guess. But
I think they're doing a lot of transformation from whatever the raw feed I'm getting fed is down into the story that I see. One of the things I like about Apple News is it's relatively ad-free, right? The text flows nicely most of the time. You know, I like that, right? Reading news in a web browser on the internet, you know, in a vanilla way can be a painful experience. So, but I think the phone is doing a lot of computation in order to make that happen. Which is, I guess, the thing. I mean, that's Apple's philosophy, right? Do the computation on the device, that way Apple doesn't know, right? Which is the counterpoint to Google's, I do it in the cloud and send the device the minimal number of bits it needs. But now Google knows what they want to know. They want all your data. So, I don't know. Have you I mean, beyond your phone brokenness, do you feel like your battery lasts as long today as it did when your phone was new? Assuming you can get your phone to charge
all the time. It's really hard to tell. I have a lot of problems with the battery in my phone, so I'm not a good case to look at. I don't feel like it lasts as long as it used to. Because I remember when I first started, you know, it's the 6S Plus, and when I first started using it, I would get 2 full days. Like, I only had to charge it every other night.
Yours not an S, right?
I have the 6 Plus, yeah. I just have the 6 Plus. And when it first came out, you know, that was one of the headline features.
Yep.
Right? It'll last for 2 days, and mine did, and that was amazing coming from an Android phone that, you know, hardly lasted a day.
One of the things that's happened, though, is as I've had this giant phone in my life, and I've lived with its large size compromise, it's quite a nice thing to look at.
Yeah, I think you are right. I think I spend much more time doing Facebook, internet browsing, reading the news, doing crosswords, stuff like that on my phone than I did prior to having the large phone.
Yeah. I mean, I have an iPad, and I still use the iPad for a lot of things. But when I had an iPhone 5, which is my phone before this, I feel like a lot of things that I just use my phone for, I would have used my iPad for.
Right.
And so...
That is true.
I think I'm just using it more, right? Mm. But I, you know... Does that mean I need a battery case for the thing? I mean, I hate the fact that I have to have a case on it anyway because camera bump. If you believe the rumors for whatever the next iPhone is, Apple's doubling down on that, and the camera bump is supposed to be bigger
on the next phone. Now with more bump.
Now with more bump.
Awesome.
So... our long camera bump nightmare continues.
Interestingly, you know, we had recently talked about the headphone jack going away.
And
I
said,
I don't care.
Yeah, you're looking forward to this, right?
I like wireless Bluetooth headphones. It's going to be great. Well, I have the hardest time keeping things charged. And so today I wanted to go for a walk and listen to a podcast. And... I have 3 wireless Bluetooth headsets now, and all of them were dead. And then I couldn't find my iPhone and my Apple earbuds. I ended up having to dig through a drawer and get this old, like, free earbuds I got with an Android handset, like, 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know. And they worked, but...
Yeah, because your phone still has a headphone jack.
Yeah, and so I was raging around the house, you know, trying to find headphones. And I did think at that moment, you know, maybe headphones that have to be charged are not always ideal.
Well, so I have Bluetooth headphones that I use when I'm running, and I have... Are my headphones charged anxiety, right? Like, I've gotten a pretty good feel now for how many days I can go, you know, before I have to charge them. But I'm always charging those things before they're empty, because I'm just afraid that they're not going to work, and then you're going to be sad, right?
And as long as you operate under a premise that you just always, you use them and then you put them back on the charger, and you use them, you put them back on the charger, they're always charged. And I tend to do that for a period of time, and then something will change. Like, I'll go on a trip and I'll unplug the charger and I'll take it with me, and then it ends up in my office and not, you know, in the kitchen, and then they end up not charged, and then I move to the other pair. And, you know, over time, circumstantially, something happens such that the charging cycle stops, and then the whole thing breaks down and I'm left without music.
That same phenomenon happens to me, not with Bluetooth headphones, but, I've given up on transporting chargers, right? You know, my bag that I haul, you know, clothes and whatever in, right? With my luggage when I travel just has a charger in it now. And it has a lightning cable in it, and it has the stupid micro USB charger for all the other stupid crap. And probably it's going to have to end up with some stupid USB-C cable in it too at some point, so that I can charge the myriad of devices that are undoubtedly all going to have a different friggin' hole. But I just put a cable and a charger in there so that I don't have to disrupt my stuff at home, right? You know, because where I charge the phone and all that stuff at home, I like to just leave it plugged in there. And when I get home and I'm tired, I don't have to dig the charger, the cable out of the bag and reach behind this and do that. It's just there and ready to go. Some people go so far as to, like, dedicate a drawer in their nightstand or in the kitchen or in the bathroom.
To just device charging,
yeah. Right? They get a dedicated set of cables and chargers, you know, and just put it in there and that's going. And you never touch it.
Maybe. It's not the worst idea.
Yeah, maybe that's what you need to do.
Anyway, it got me thinking that maybe I would rather they ship a lightning port wired set of headphones, earbuds with the phone instead of something wireless. I have my own wireless. I'll buy my own wireless.
My guess is if they do it, wired headphones via the lightning port or whatever port is on the phone
is what they'll ship.
Will be the in the box thing, and the step up will be the wireless ones. That'll be the $99 accessory right. That you can buy.
I think that's good. I think it's good to have one pair of wired headphones for this very situation where nothing's charged.
Yeah. And it'd be awesome if they did magnetic induction charging like the watch. Hmm. That'd be kind of neat.
Yeah. Except now, you know, you'd have to buy a extra magnetic induction charger for your travel bag.
Maybe. I don't know how people charge watches on the road, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe just charge with the watch charger. So rumors are watch hardware version 2.0 maybe this fall.
I heard somebody talking about it on a podcast that said it's going to have built-in GPS, which I went on the record saying I didn't think would happen because I thought they were kind of disincentivized to put GPS in the watch because they want you to carry the phone. So... I don't know. We'll see. That would be exciting to me if it had built-in GPS.
Normally, I think most Apple things in my life, I have gotten too thin. You know, like the phone is thinner than it needs to be, in my opinion. If it was thicker and had more battery and less camera bump, I'd be happier all around. except for... The stupid watch is too thick, in my opinion. It's also square, which isn't my thing. I feel like the next watch should be thinner. I would like it to be. I think it would look... It would have better aesthetics if it was thinner. Hmm. So, we'll see. I don't know. I'm really intrigued to see what... Like, where they go with the hardware on version 2, right? Once they've had some time to think about it and get some real data in the field, right? Because, for better or worse, you know, all of Gen 1 Apple Watch buyers have been beta testers. Thank you, people. Nicely done.
Yeah.
So, a friend of mine is... going off to graduate school this fall, and he needs a new computer, and he wants to buy a Mac. And I keep telling him, don't. All of the laptops are terrible, right? You're right on the cusp of something brand new, right? But he's really running up into this.
It's time.
Class starts soon, right? I need something.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's going to do. I suggested to him an iPad Pro. But that's just, that's too far out of the bounds of imaginability for him to have an iPad Pro with a smart keyboard cover and Microsoft Office on iOS, like, and that be his note-taking, you know, paper writing setup. That kind of blew his mind, and he's, no, he's
not. Well, I wouldn't stand for that, so.
What, you wouldn't do it?
Oh, no, never.
Why not?
Because I need a real keyboard, and I need something that can sit on my lap and I can type on.
What makes you think any new laptop that comes from Apple is going to have a real keyboard?
Yeah, well, I mean,
my guess is if you think current MacBook Pro keyboards are the best thing ever and you'll never accept anything less than that, I think you should prepare yourself for the inevitable disappointment.
I don't think so.
Have you typed on the MacBook One port?
Yeah, just for a few minutes in the Apple Store.
Yeah, and that keyboard is terrible. I don't really
care for it. I think that even the MacBook Air had a keyboard very similar to this. I think when the form factor is the 15-inch model, there's so much space that they couldn't possibly justify putting that keyboard in it. I mean, they got nothing but space. Do they want it? Unless they want the like 15-inch to look like the 17-inch used to, you know how ridiculous that was with the little teeny tiny keyboard and then like beaches of silver all around, you know, it,
yeah.
Because they didn't spread out the keyboard to make use of the space. Unless they're going to do that and you're going to have this teeny tiny Mac One keyboard in the center of your 15-inch unibody.
My guess is the pros are going to have better keyboards than the MacBook. But I'm not holding out hope that it's going to be as good as the current pros. Hmm. I think the thing Apple has learned is they can get away with crappy keyboards. And if you're part of the very tiny minority of people who actually care, you'll buy some external keyboard.
Yeah.
And quit complaining.
Hmm.
So that's my cynical prediction.
So is he going to buy a laptop?
Maybe. Don't know. Hmm. I'll probably see him this weekend. At a birthday party I'm going to go to with a bunch of crappy food at it. Because that's what my life is these days.
Yeah, I would hate to be buying a new machine right now. Well, I wouldn't, period.
Yeah, it's just,
I'd find some way to get by.
It's just so terrible. And I'm pretty sure Apple knows it's terrible. And it'll be really interesting to see if we figure out... is it because Intel's late shipping CPUs? Is there a GPU chip problem? Or is it this rumored, you know, new hardware packaging, right, with whatever this non-function key, you know, OLED display touchscreen thing is? I don't know, right? But whatever it is, Apple's really missed the boat here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating.
I think they're going to see huge sales when they do release something new.
Oh, yeah. I think there's incredible
pent-up demand.
Yeah, there's a whole swath of people that are like, it's got to hold out just a couple more months.
Right.
One of these days, they're finally going to ship new MacBook Pros. And my guess is, I don't know what a total percentage of sales is going to be, but my guess is there's going to be a bunch of people who'll be like, whatever the maximum 15-inch MacBook Pro is, just give me that damn thing.
Yep.
And leave me alone, right? I need it. I need it now.
Yep.
So, there's a real potential that if Apple can build them fast enough that they'll make some real money, because those have to be huge profit margin items when they sell them. So, yeah. All right. Should we talk about some of these articles we were going to talk about?
Sure.
Let's talk about this desalination plant that came online recently in Israel. Let me see if I can click over to it. It's it has a name. Sorek, I think I'm saying that right, the Sorek desalination plant. Which, you know, it is one of several desalination plants that's in Israel, but it has these things coupled with some fairly Herculean water reduction and recycling efforts inside Israel. Has allowed Israel to go from basically not having enough fresh water to actually having a legitimate surplus of fresh water. And what's interesting is this desalination plant is using a new technology that makes the membranes that filter out the salt. Normally in traditional desal plants, those things get clogged with bacteria and stuff. And this new, like, pre-filter that they put on there that is basically using lava rock prevents that from happening, or it happens at a much slower rate, and it lowers the cost of the fresh water that comes out of this desalination plant by quite a lot. Like, they're saying that the cost has come down 50% or more compared to what desalination plants cost, 20 years ago in the 1990s. And so that's fortuitous at a time when a lot of fresh water sources on land and aquifers and whatever else are drying up and being contaminated or otherwise spent. This article implies, though it doesn't directly say, because it's mostly about this particular plant, implies that part of the way humanity is going to have fresh water in the future is a bunch more desalination plants coming online.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't disagree with that.
I found it to be very interesting because I don't know anything about desalination, but I just always thought that it was something that was too prohibitively expensive. Like, it was not a viable option for replacing freshwater stores in America.
Well, it's certainly more expensive than just pumping water out of the ground.
Right. But...
but if there's no other water, then it's cheap.
Yeah, and they said, like, in Israel, what did it say? 1,000 liters of drinking water for 58 cents. Israeli households pay about $30 U.S. a month for their water. Comparatively, households in most U.S. cities... like Las Vegas pays $47 a month. Los Angeles pays on an average $58 a month.
Yeah. Well, and what do you pay? So, what do I pay?
I mean, we pay usage based. This is kind of just an average, and I actually don't know because I get a utility bill where water, sewer, and electric are all rolled into one, and very rarely do I examine what is costing what.
Well, the biggest...
so I can't even tell you.
The biggest thing for me is... electricity use, right?
I mean, right. That dwarfs the water usage. So.
Right. I wonder, do I have utility bills? Do those get mailed to me? Well, obviously they come in the paper mail, but do I get them in email?
So this was surprising to me when, I don't think there's any desalination, at least this didn't talk about any that's like online and functional in the U.S. actually providing service, to me.
So there's one in Carlsbad, California, which is just north of San Diego. The water that comes out of there goes into the San Diego water system.
Okay.
And that is either online or currently going through its testing phase. Like, that plant has been built. I was reading about it. It's mentioned in that article because that plant is using the same new technologies that this SOREC plant in Israel is using. Okay. So I was reading about it in Wikipedia, and the Wikipedia page is a little disjointed in the way that Wikipedia pages are sometimes, but it did seem to indicate that that thing is basically up and running. And it's going to provide something like 7% of the freshwater supply for San Diego. Which can be a valuable thing if you're in a state that's burning to the ground and undergoing a drought.
Right. So I suppose if you live in California, you're a little more in tune with what your freshwater procurement options are. So maybe just living in the land of 10,000 lakes, I am not exposed to discussions of desalination plants very often.
Yeah, well, certainly we've got plenty of water, you know, that comes up out of the ground here and comes from lakes. Though it would surprise me if Minnesota works fairly hard to to manage its water resources wisely. But, you know, what do I know? Aha! The power of the internet. I have now pulled up my most recent bill.
So have I. Do you want to compare?
This is for my... What? This is my August bill. Bill date of August 9th. So this is my most recent bill. I used 8.45 units, and one unit equals 748 gallons. That's a strange thing. Yeah. So what did I say? 8.45? So that means I use 6,320 gallons. Because
we like... It seems like a lot of water, doesn't it?
It does, but there are people in my house, and I am occasionally one of them who take obnoxiously long showers.
See, so I'd like to say that I do better, but I use 4,166 gallons.
Wow.
Myself.
Well, don't forget the cat.
Well, yeah, he does drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yes, but that cost me $11.90.
Yeah, I paid $14.18.
So...
So this is why, like, when you say, well, I'll get a low-flow showerhead and save some water. Like, the payback on that... When you do the math and the spreadsheet is forever.
No, you're saving the earth. You have to be thinking of it in those terms.
But are you really? Because there's a manufacturing and carbon cost for the creation of the item and the transportation of it 8,000 miles from some rural Chinese factory to your local Home Depot store. Right? I mean, are you really saving the earth? Maybe you could just take a faster shower, Fatso.
Well, right, exactly. That's the answer. Conservation's the answer, not, you know, some crazy technology that's...
Yeah. So, yeah. It'd be interesting, though. I mean, maybe it'd be an interesting exercise to go research low-flow showerheads and try to figure out, is there a way that I can minimize... how much water I'm sending down the drain. Because at least here, it isn't the cost of the water that gets you. It's the sewer that gets you. Scroll down, right?
Yeah.
Because they assume, and it's not an unreasonable assumption, right? But they assume, hey, you used this many units of water, you must have used that many units of sewer.
Oh, that's interesting. So if I just filled 5-gallon pails and just dumped all the water out in my backyard, I would still get charged for the wastewater?
Yeah, if you just turned on the sprinkler and watered your yard.
Well, that's kind of bull.
That's how it works.
Yeah, so it actually, the water itself for me costs almost around $12, and then the wastewater is $32.
Yeah, it's $41 for wastewater for me.
That's crazy.
So yeah, there you go. And then apparently we have to pay a county transit tax. Don't know what that's for, but there you go. $14 of taxes. I paid more in taxes than I did for water.
So it alleviates my worries a little bit. You know, there's this worry in the back of your head that is the water supply. Did you see The Big Short? Maybe we saw that together.
No.
You remember at the end of that, there was this guy in it who was like a savant and he saw the mortgage crisis coming.
Okay.
And he was one of the few people who did. That's the story in the movie. At the end of the movie, in the, you know, where are they now section, it says that he is now dealing exclusively in water, trading surrounding water.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be the next crisis.
Well, of course it's going to be the next crisis.
So that, among other things, you know, news stories and stuff you hear over the years, in the back of my mind is... water, you know, is this huge problem. This makes me feel like it's a little bit less of a problem, right? If we have, if we're surrounded by oceans, that now we can use the water.
Well, you know, our planet is not going to run out of water. Whether it's water is as cheap as it is now, and whether you're going to have access to it, those are legitimate questions. The answer is in America, probably. Though I would assume, I'm just guessing here, but I'm going to assume water is going to be 2 to 3 times as expensive in 20 years as it is now. But you won't care because you need water.
Right.
This Scientific American article about the Israeli desalination plant talks about, Syria, like Israel's been on top of its water scarcity problem since forever, and you know Syria has not, and the civil war in Syria has its roots in a lack of water, and a bunch of farmers with failed crops, and so you know let's go live in a shanty town outside of the city, and then lo and behold, now we're fighting. Mm-hmm. This is a real possibility all around the world. It takes a lot of foresight and planning to prepare for something that is not an immediate crisis, right? And we see it all the time in this country, right? The water in Flint, right? With the lead, right? That's a problem of, you know, we don't have the money and we're not willing to invest it, you know, wisely in the years leading up to the problem, and then, you know, now we have a real crisis.
Crisis is upon us,
right? There was when Katrina flooded out Louisiana. It came to light that there was opportunities and even occasionally money for them to improve their levee system, and they chose to spend the money on something else instead, right? The sportsman's club I belong to, we have a hard time sometimes saving for the future and trying to have the money around to do the thing that you know you're going to have to do, but not today. And so it seems like, you know, yeah, I know we're saving this money to eventually replace the roof, but it sure would be nice to buy whatever this other stupid thing is right now, right? And look, there's all this money sitting here doing nothing. Well, it's not doing nothing, right? all of this stuff is the same way, right? Lots of public infrastructure, not just in the United States, but certainly all over the world, does not necessarily get the same level of investment as it needs to sustain itself into the future. Israel is a unique case in that, at least for water, they've been willing to, manage it wisely more often than not, right. So it would seem. Kudos to them.
Yep.
Hopefully other places in the Middle East will do the same.
They seem to be willing to share the technology. Like, that was one thing they talked about, Israelis working with American companies.
Sure.
To use the same technology, which is cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to be quite so cooperative with Syria, for instance, but...
I don't know. There was some mention about a cooperative agreement they're trying to do with Jordan and Palestine, about having a desalination plant on the Red Sea and then piping the output to the Dead Sea, and then sharing the output between the three places.
Again, that's another key takeaway from this article. The Sea of Galilee is, in fact, a freshwater lake. I did not know that.
Hey, everybody needs a little Mideast geography refresher from time to time, right?
Yeah, I guess I didn't pay attention in Sunday school.
yeah, no comment. So that's, I mean, quite honestly, that's a hopeful thing, right?
Yep.
Desalination is not a panacea. It has its problems. And there are downsides to it. But there are downsides to everything. And at the end of the day, people need water or it's going to get ugly. And, desalination is one way amongst many that we can be sure that all the people who need water can get access to some water. Which leads into this other article about the world is not falling apart.
Oh, are we going to end on a happy note here?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, this article is all about, the number of people who die is going down worldwide, right? Like, the number of people who die from wars is going down, and the number of people who die from all this other stuff is going down. And, if you watch the news, you maybe get a different impression, but the actual aggregate statistics worldwide tell a different story. You're less likely to die from violence at this point in history than at any previous point.
Right.
Irregardless of whether, this year's numbers are slightly higher than last year's numbers or whatever, right? That's a year-to-year variation, but the long-term trend is things are going down. I feel like these sorts of articles are important to highlight and put out into the world, because sometimes people get so wrapped up into whatever they read in the echo chamber of the internet or on their nightly news of choice.
And it's campaign slogans.
Yeah, and it's all bad, right? Like, it's just all terrible. And that's not actually true. Like, one of the things I like to read every year is the Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway letter to investors, because he is always bullish on America, right? And he makes a very strong case for optimism for America and the world. That basic worldview has made Warren Buffett a wealthy guy. Also being a little bit lucky and pretty smart and being good friends with Charlie Munger, but that's neither here nor there. we've talked about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation before too, right? I mean, they look at the same statistics, and their basic message is you know, the world is better now than it was, and we're trying to make it even better, right? There's a lot of optimism. Sometimes I feel like people forget that, especially in election years in this country.
Yeah, so, I mean, while the general premise was that we still live in a peaceful time, the most peaceful time, that I think... near the end of the article, it talks about how, you know, things are happening that are not necessarily good developments.
Sure.
And, you know, a small change in a bad direction needs to be corrected before it gets out of hand.
Right.
So I think what they were trying, you know, what he was trying to say is don't become complacent just because I'm telling you that life's still pretty good. Life can get worse.
It can.
If you're not careful. Yeah. But I think understanding that life is still pretty good is a good first step towards not letting it get bad.
Right.
Not thinking, you know, everything's going to hell, so...
So screw it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. The, yeah, you don't want to be complacent, but, you know, the long arc of history is improving. And, you know, you should be hopeful. It's worth it. What else you got?
That's it. I'm running on no caffeine, man.
No caffeine and I'm no tapped tequila.
Out. Yeah.
It's this is 100% pure unfiltered Scott.
Sad truth.
All right, till next week.
Sounds good. See ya.